CliffCentral.com. Justice is about to fly out of South Africa to go and try his hand at living in the United States.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is the last of the burning platform.
Well, as it currently is, but we'll probably talk to you.
Yes, yes.
I'm sure we'll connect a few times and find out what's going on over there, and you'll still have a better idea of what's going on over here with some objectivity and distance.
And you'll be closer to Cardi B, so you can give us more concise updates on her life as well.
I don't think everyone should know about my little obsession with Cardi B.
Listen, you're not the only one. So, Justice, you and the family moving to California, huh?
Yeah, yeah. My lovely wife has got an opportunity there.
Yeah.
And we are tagging along. And so,
are the kids excited?
The kids are excited, very excited, and we'll be in LA. So,
wow.
So yeah, I mean, when you talk to me next time, I'll be a beach bum on Venice Beach.
On Muscle Beach, you're going to be with all the guys with the free weights.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, I might come back looking very buff.
Good. Yeah.
Finally, Ben, you know, I might actually do something about my, you know, looks, my health, I'm going to be like you, basically. I'm going to, I'm cleaning up, man. Sun, surf. Might even, you know, my daughter's a surfer, so I might put a toe in the water now.
This will be good. Well, I think, you know, we all have to be global citizens, right?
Yeah.
No matter who you are or where you are, the more you connect to the rest of the world, the likelier your chances of being able to make an impact are.
No, absolutely. I always say to people, you know, for me, travel has done incredible things for me. We're talking about Zimbabwe now.
By the way, if anyone wants to hear Justice's ideas around what's going on in Zimbabwe and his thoughts on that, you can either listen to last week's podcast, which seems to have been prophetic, or you can listen to the first part of today's show, in which you'll hear Justice come in just after KF Malindi about the Zim elections. But you were onto a thing about traveling.
But I was saying travel really does do incredible things for you as a human being. I did A levels in Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, I was a young kid, and all the people I met there, the South Africans I met there, and I'm still, you know, my best friend is still someone I met when I was in Zimbabwe as a 19-year-old. But one of the things about that is that it gives you a nice perspective on how the world works, on how, you know, being in one place doesn't always expand your horizons as much as all that. So, you know, I've lived in Zim, I've lived in the UK, I've lived in the US. I spent a lot of time in Nigeria, which really I feel like is my real home. I don't know if any of you guys have been to Lagos. You get off the plane and you know that you've got to be alive or you will die in this place. You are fully alive. And I loved spending time there. It's still one of the best periods of my life, working for a Nigerian company and doing, you know, traveling into Lagos all the time. So I don't feel, you know, with this move, it's another step on the journey of being a global citizen, being in places where you're not as comfortable as you always are at home. And you get to reflect a little bit more. And I think you get to look at yourself a little bit more differently. I think one of the comforts of being at home all the time is that you stop stepping outside of yourself.
In your comfort zone.
Yeah. And I think we need a bit more of looking around, you know.
Well, Trump's America is going to be interesting. You're going to have so much more to talk about. Can I make a few observations quickly? First of all, you're wearing an LA cap, which is interesting. So you're already becoming a bit of a
totally
local.
Totally coincidental, though, I must say. But
nothing's coincidental. Number two, I suppose you're feeling a little nostalgic because I saw your background picture on Twitter is a picture of a very young Justice Malala and Nelson Mandela.
Yes, that's a long time ago. I think that was 1992.
And despite that bit of nostalgia, you're also very realistic because your pinned tweet back from February the 20th is a picture of Jacob Zuma's cabinet in which you have pointed out to us, yes, the thief Musi Benziswane is right in front.
There are things you hope for, you know, Gareth. I was hoping that Musi Benziswane would try to sue me.
Yeah.
Because he's been accused of so many things, it would be lovely for him to say, I'm taking you to court, and actually go to court and tell the nation that he did not participate, in fact, not just participate, that he was not front and center of the Gupta machinery. I would like him to actually just say, you know, you guys at Cliff Central, you and Justice Malala, I'm taking you. Because if there is anything, the past 10 years, you know, we'll talk about it a bit later, but unemployment in South Africa has gone up again to 27.2%. There are 10 million people. There are 6 million young people who don't have jobs today. And, you know, I think the past 10 years, while the world recovered from the global meltdown and so forth, we, because of state capture, because of the role of Jacob Zuma, the Guptas and so forth, they have stolen people's lives. And I would love nothing more than to see people like Musi Benziswane actually in a court of law. We should actually dare him more and more and more until he sues us and we go to court with him. It would be lovely to have Ben sitting by my side, Sia, yourself, and, you know, being sued by Musi Benziswane. And I tell you, with just what's in the public domain, forget the rest, we would expose him. That's why he's not suing.
There was a great Sapira cartoon yesterday, which I'm sure you saw as well. It could have been earlier this week. I'm not sure what date it was published on. But it's Cyril trying to carry this closet of Smolanyana skeletons, which includes Batabile Dlamini and Nomvula Mokonyane and Musi Benziswane and a whole lot of other terrible people that are still part of the machinery in some way, shape, or form. I did see that, and I was sure you'd be pleased, that Duduzi Manana has eventually been thrown out of the NEC.
Yeah, you know, it's the Cyril thing for me is in a way a sadness that he's carrying so much of the Zuma baggage, and I think that there's a lot of you know, there's a Zulu word I like. It's amahemhem. There's a lot of jiggery pokery going on in the ANC to unseat him, to make him uncomfortable, to eventually in 5 years' time essentially take him out. And so I think all those discredited individuals from the Jacob Zuma administrations are still around. You know, it shows you just how powerful they were that on February 26th, He fired 10 of them. Where's Bongani Bongo? Where is, David Mahlobo? Where is all these people? 10 of them were fired, and yet you still have Batabile Dlamini. You still have all these characters who shouldn't be in cabinet, and they're still around.
Some of them should be in jail.
Some of them should be in jail, quite frankly. I mean, we're still struggling to find out why has, for example, the CPS contract, the social grants payment contract, why has it stayed with one company after the, I think it was that, not the High Court, the Constitutional Court said the contract is null and void and unlawful and still went on. So I think he's got a mountain on his back, and you know, given developments this week, I don't know if he's succeeding in shifting that. So you know, the ANC is not a happy place. If you were to ask me, why did Cyril go on the land issue, make that extraordinary announcement in the evening of Tuesday? I think it's part of that burden he's carrying. His biggest challenge is the ANC itself. It's totally unreconstructed from the Zuma period, and it remains a very, very divided, very
compromised, right?
Compromised structure. I don't think the values that he holds or says he holds and espouses are in any way back at the heart and center of the ANC.
So I see a lot of people getting very excited about what he announced on Tuesday, which was that they're going to go ahead, despite the fact that public hearings are ongoing. It seems that they're just a checking the box scenario. And that has its own legal implications, because we thought that we were going to have hearings.
Yeah.
And now suddenly Cyril's gone, no, we're going to go ahead and try and change the constitution.
There was so
much. There's knee-jerk, there's trying to accommodate everybody. We've got this rotten ANC, we've got the good ANC. Some people say that they both still exist. Cyril seems to have jumped the gun here. I mean, what does this mean? Because people are saying it's potentially the very worst news that the economy could have at the moment. Yeah.
There are two things that happened there. The first one is absolutely the what you're saying. You go to Parliament, you adopt a motion, revised motion, the EFF put it on, the ANC changed it around. You start a process. 200,000 people write letters to this parliamentary committee. Vincent Smith, the chair of that committee, goes around the country with Musiwa Lekota, Julius Malema, they're part of that committee. They listen to people in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, KZN, all over. They're about to go to the Western Cape, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, the ANC halfway through says, no, we're going to expropriate without compensation, which is not actually new. But they say we're going to change the constitution, which is new for the ANC.
Right.
So, first of all, what is the point? You start the process and you stop it. Let me tell you what, with the ANC or anywhere in the world, if Sia moves to the Ukraine or France and decides and goes there and the law is this way, mm-hmm. what he would like to see is a situation where the leaders of that country say, this is what we stand for, or this is what we're going to do if we're going to change immigration law and so forth. And then they go and do it. Not, oh, we think we're going to do this. Oh, we think we're going to do this. Because it confuses foreign investors. It confuses domestic investors. It confuses everyone. What Cyril Ramaphosa has just done is the worst thing any leader can do, because it says this person doesn't have a position. They flip-flop with the wind. So the first thing is that if you say, I want $100 billion in investment into South Africa.
And he's been trying to flog this story.
Exactly.
You know, he's been traveling the world trying to get some foreign investment.
Exactly. So if this is your aim, you can't go and say, no, we're not going to do this, we're going to do this. And then, out of nowhere, I can tell you, you know, political reporters go around and try and sniff things out. Not a single political reporter thought this ANC Lekgotla is going to go that way. Because the ANC has had a land summit, mm-hmm. has had hearings within its own leadership, it's met other people, and it has said, we don't think the constitution should be changed. Instead, we will use the expropriation bill and the land restitution bill to give people land.
Yeah.
So what is going on now that in the middle of nowhere you just flip-flop like that? And that is the first thing.
Well, I have two possible ideas that might give us some answers. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You can tell me if you think these are rubbish or not. First one is that the ANC fear nothing more than political pressure from the left, in this case the EFF, mm-hmm. because they've stolen their lunch and they're worried that the EFF have got populism on their side in this respect. And second of all, maybe that the people of South Africa actually do want this. Maybe, because when I explain to people that, you know, basic economics, X, Y, and Z, this is adding up to that, that's subtracted from that, this is how the world of supply and demand works, and this is why property rights matter, because it's the foundation of the economy, they say to me, please, you're speaking from a position of privilege, give back the land.
There is two fundamental issues here. The first one is that you've got a Bill of Rights in South Africa. It guarantees you the right to life, the right to property, and so forth. you don't want to be fiddling with your Bill of Rights and changing it willy-nilly. It was written with what we're going through in mind, and it allows you the ability to change things around a bit. So I worry when people say, oh, let us fiddle with the Constitution. Let me tell you now, if you start doing that, it can be quite a slippery slope. But it's an interesting thing, the idea of changing the Bill of Rights. Again, to change the Bill of Rights, you need 75% of the National Assembly in consent. So the ANC has 62%, the EFF has 6%. They only have 68% between the two of them. It's not it's a two-thirds majority, but it's not a 75%. So I'd like that conversation to start about how and where the rest of the numbers are going to come from. Maybe from the rats and mice from, you know, APC and certainly not COPE, but we'll see where that ends up. Is it from a position of privilege? The ANC doesn't have to change the constitution to achieve the aim of expropriating land and giving it to ordinary people. The ANC, over the past 24 years, has failed to use the laws that are available to it, to use its political will to give people land. Think about it. We have a minister, Senzeni Zokwana.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks ago, we read in the newspapers that someone who works at the ANC head office was arrested for allegedly being involved in cash in transit heists. Someone says, but this name sounds familiar. And it turns out that that person was one of the beneficiaries, got a farm, basically, from the minister.
Mm-hmm. And sounds very Zimbabwean.
Exactly. So you think about who gets to benefit or who has benefited from land reform under the ANC. It's politically connected people, because here's a friend of Senzeni Zokwana's who works at the ANC head office, has now been is now in the chuki for allegedly robbing cash in transit vehicles, and you say, is that a farmer? What is this? And I can tell you now, I don't think he was using that farm for productive purposes, maybe for training to prepare for some cash in transit heist or something. So I think what South Africans need is a program where you take land, and there is a lot of land, and you transfer it to ordinary black South Africans, one who want to farm, two people who want to live in the city and can't find places to live. So you start saying, I'm going to reimagine the city and have ordinary black people having access to some of this land and some of these properties. So I think this is absolutely the ANC thinking the EFF is ahead of us on this,
mm-hmm.
and so we're going to try and overtake them. And,
pull the carpet out from under them. This is their big issue. All they've got left, right?
It's all they've got left.
Because they were the whole reason the EFF exists was because they didn't like Jacob Zuma, and Jacob Zuma threw them out of the ANC.
Exactly. So the one issue where the EFF is consistent is on the land issue. Absolutely consistent. The rest of the time, they flip-flop on every issue that you can
But
find.
It's interesting. I mean, all of this talk around, you know, state-owned enterprises, about the socialism light that they're trying to implement left, right, and center, this the idea of property being fiddled with, it all speaks to a Venezimbabwe idea. And I saw that just this morning, just today, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has admitted his economic model has failed. In the wake of, now it takes something for a politician to admit that he's failed, because they never do that, right? They'll go to the grave saying they did the right thing. Says it has failed in the wake of food and medicine shortages and public service paralysis, such as the International Monetary Fund predicted. He says the production models we've tried so far have failed, and the responsibility is ours, mine and yours, Maduro told ruling PSUV party congresses. as Venezuela looks to tackle chronic inflation. Do you know what the inflation rate is? 1,000,000%. 1,000,000% is the economic failure of Venezuelan numbers.
It means that you're standing there with cash in your pocket and suddenly you can't buy anything with the cash
Nothing.
In your pocket. In a second, just like that. I mean, I'm clearing out a lot of stuff in my house and I keep on finding this $1 trillion notes from Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the thing that happens.
So someone has to sit down and talk to the economic illiterates inside of our political parties, and they're in all the parties, and explain to them how this stuff works, because otherwise all we're going to have is poverty.
The point about the policy choices that we're making right now is the point about these choices we're making is that, sadly, everyone loses. So the poor, if you take the 10 million unemployed people in South Africa right now, the 67% youth unemployment, you're not going to fix it with these kind of flip-flopping on policy, unsure about what you're doing or saying stuff to please other people. So that's the first thing.
Just by the way, the Statistics SA report came out this week.
Yes.
And do you know how many people employ someone, even if it's one person?
Mm.
Employment in South Africa, obviously employees are the people who work for somebody.
Mm.
Employers, there are only 800,000 employers in South Africa. 800,000, and that number has not improved. It has not increased since 2008.
So you have to stop and say, this whole thing, government must give us jobs. Government must create the climate for people to start businesses and for people to then employ other people. You will never have employment if you don't make the space for entrepreneurs. But if CEO were to start a business right now, you know, he'd have to jump, go through hoops, go through CIPC and this and that. By the time he actually thinks about his business, he's got paper coming out of his ears. So, I mean, building the environment, taking out the uncertainty is part of the big thing. And what we're talking about now with this flip-flopping on land, and I think that land reform can be done and it should be done. But I must say, Cyril Ramaphosa on Tuesday failed one on communication. You don't communicate the thing the way he did. It looked clumsy. It looked unthought through. It looked panicked because it was, oops, let me see how I can get rid of the EFF very quickly. And quite frankly, he failed to speak to any constituency. No one is happy except the EFF, and they're happy because they're going to use it to say, you see, we are the leaders. Cyril Ramaphosa and the ANC merely follow. And so it's quite frankly, it's a sad way to see Cyril Ramaphosa play politics, really, with such an important issue. And there will be consequences.
It's going to cost him what little political capital he has. People were very excited when he stepped into the hold and took control of the vacuum after Jacob Zuma had disappeared, and people said, oh, well, Cyril's going to fix things.
Yeah.
And people still clapping and cheering in some places, but it's dwindling.
It's dwindling fast because he needs to show that he's not the populist that Jacob Zuma was. And in this case, he is being populist. He is being, in many ways, weak. I mean, I think we need to talk about his strength in the ANC, because if one meeting of the ANC's NEC Lekgotla can outplay him and outsmart him this way, to the extent that the lead ANC person on land, Ronald Lamola,
mm-hmm.
the lead ANC person on the economy, Enoch Godongwana, yesterday at that press conference, they were flailing about to explain something that just 1 week ago they were very comfortable explaining. They basically went into a meeting unprepared, and the Jacob Zuma crowd the populists went in and outplayed them in that meeting. And I think it bodes very badly for the Ramaphosa administration if decisions are made in the way that this one was made. So, you know, let me put it this way, you know. Sometimes we walk on eggshells in South Africa and don't speak the truth. The truth is this. There isn't a single country that has tried to do what we're doing and succeeded. We need clearer, fresher, more reasonable thinking than if you take Julius Malema's adoration for Venezuela. We are lucky that we've lived through the past 8 years where we saw people like Julius Malema say, I love the policies of Venezuela. They are fantastic and amazing. And here we are. You can rattle off those statistics that you've rattled off now. And we know what has happened in that country. But we're still going on as if we have learned nothing from there. If you say, if you take the policies that happened in Venezuela and put them in South Africa, what is the likelihood that they'll work here? And as they haven't worked in that country, you take the policies that have failed in Zimbabwe over the past 20 years since 1998 and 2000. And you say, if they haven't worked in Zimbabwe, what makes you think they'll work here?
Mm-hmm.
So these, you take the evidence, you put it in front of you, and you still say, no, it will work here. It's like someone says, no, you know, I'm going to have sex without protection and I won't have children.
I'll have a shower afterwards and I won't get HIV.
Exactly. It's what happened to evidence-based policymaking?
Nah.
The evidence is before us.
Nah.
It hasn't worked anywhere. You know, it's mind-boggling, in my view, that we're still not looking around and saying some people have done it well. These are the people, and some people have failed spectacularly. We walk around, oh no, we are exceptional. We'll do it differently. How are we going to do it differently? Take the case of Senzeni Zokwana and this man who's in jail for the cash heist. It's the classic Zimbabwe story. My friend is a minister. I'm an ordinary person, and I get a farm. And, you know, Ben gets a farm, and Sia mm-hmm. gets a farm. Because, well, my dad is a politician.
But,
my mom is
someone
a politician.
Someone who actually wants to farm?
A
young black farmer who has no money and resources at his disposal and really wants to farm is completely ignored because he doesn't have the political connections.
Exactly. So the point about this whole thing is, you know, let's be better than this. Let's not sit here mouthing off all these.
All right, but I want us to be silly for a minute. This is the last Burning Platform where you're actually in the studio.
We are not allowed to be silly, but yes, you
all right,
are.
All right, so Julius Malema discharged a rifle in public. The funniest part of this is that the BLF are looking to sue the white man who gave him the rifle because they say it is irresponsible of white people to give someone like Julius Malema a rifle. There are so many things that I want to get into on this. I mean, where do we even begin?
I want to know, this is for the BLF. When a white person gives me, a black person, a rifle, why don't I say, no, thanks, man? How dare you give me a rifle? No.
Because I don't think the BLF believe black people have agency.
You can think.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It tells you a lot about what they really feel.
You know, this is the black first, land first, and they don't think black people can. So Julius Malema is a little baby. Oh, tiny baby, tiny baby. Here's a rifle. Yes, yes, I'll take it. Jeepers. I mean, the guy couldn't say no.
No, he doesn't have agency. It's the white people make all the decisions.
The white people made him do it.
And if it's not the white people in the BLF world, then it's the Guptas. But certainly no black people get to decide for themselves.
Yeah. So what are they doing? This is a man.
And that's the kind of racism even Verwoerd would go, yo, let's just think about this.
It's easy now. I must say, we're going to get back to that. But Jacob Zuma on Friday, this is true, guys. On Friday, Jacob Zuma appeared in court again. It's a happy days for Jacob Zuma. He's in court every week. Yeah. So, he was in court last Friday. And he gives a long speech And then he says right towards the end that, and oh, by the way, people must vote for the for BLF. This is the president of the ANC, the former president of the ANC.
So he's totally given up on the ANC.
So he says the ANC is nice, and but he says these guys are very straight. They know what they're talking about. Because, you know, the number of people who've been going to support Jacob Zuma has been diminishing, you know? Mm-hmm. I wish journalists would go and look at the first time he appeared. There were 2,000 people. Then there were 1,000. I think last week it was even 500. Before long, it will be Andile Mqitama and Carl Niehaus, just the two of them, toying there with Andile laying charges against Carl Niehaus. How dare you support a black person? It's just crazy stuff. But anyway, so you have this extraordinary situation of Jacob Zuma saying people must vote for the BLF because the BLF is all, you know, it's fantastic. And I thought, isn't it amazing we have these leaders who are out of power and who are sitting there resentful, turning against their own, because Robert Mugabe also held a press conference.
Yes, exactly. And what did he say? Don't vote for ZANU.
I mean, can I just say for the record, if you're going to hold a press conference, it would be good if you can actually wake up for the press conference, because he was like that, you know, young people like to say, if he dies, he dies.
Oh.
And I thought he was going to die
right there,
live.
Right. Live on TV.
Live on TV. But he managed to wheeze out some some bon mots. And so he wheezes out that I wouldn't vote for the ZANU PF. In opposition guys, and he goes on to say there's lots of the opposition, vote for them, don't vote for this, for these guys, Mnangagwa and all of them. Same people he'd sat next to for nearly 37 years in power.
Unbelievable.
So can I just say, I found it extraordinary, people saying after Julius Malema let off that gun, mm-hmm. which the EFF now says no. The EFF is amazing. They say no, it wasn't a gun, it was a toy. And someone says, well, what about the, you know, the gun shots that everyone had? They said no, that was fireworks in the thing. I thought, you know, 10 out of 10, 100 out of 100 to the EFF, because they managed to coordinate that dastardly white man giving him the rifle, him jumping around and seeming to pull the trigger, and
the fireworks at the same
going
time.
Going off all at the same time.
Great.
What a bloody
coordination.
That is coordination.
I mean, they should be orchestra conductors.
They should be, you know what? They should be expropriating land without compensation. It just works.
There are a few people who want to address specific things we've brought up over the last few years, Justice. First of all, here's Daniel, who says, a quick question for Justice. Where on earth is Claudie Motsoeneng? I think a new show on where the fuck is Claudie Motsoeneng would be a great segment.
Claudie Motsoeneng is around. I think, I was talking to you, but two weeks ago, mm-hmm. he said that things would be way better in this country if he was president, and that he wants to run for president. And someone quipped that, jeepers, we better take this thing seriously, because, you know, when Donald Trump said he's going to run for president, we all laughed. Khaudi says he's going to run for president. We're laughing now. But it don't be so funny when he's sitting in the union buildings and saying independent media mustn't broadcast, so Sia is going to go to jail forthwith. When he's banning everything left, right, and center. When he puts the army on the street. Can you imagine Khaudi Motsoeneng with some power? Because we gave him a little bit of power at the SABC. And they're broke. They're so broke. Even today, they're broke because they're still trying to sort out his mess from years ago.
But he would run the country.
But he says
it's like, the government saying they'll run property better when they've run Eskom into the ground.
Exactly.
All right. So let's try and end on a happy note here, because there are one or two things in South Africa that we could be pleased about today. Mm. The president has informed the Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions, Nomcobo Jiba, and Special Director of Public Prosecutions, Lawrence Mrwebi, about his intention to institute inquiries into their fitness to hold office. Is this the final curtain for those two idiots?
You know, we've spoken so much about those two. The fact that they did nothing and seemed to protect the state capture people, that every case that involved the Guptas never saw the light of day. You'll remember that those two are essentially deputies to Sean the Sheep Abrams.
Mm-hmm.
I think slowly that institution is being cleared out. In a few weeks, we'll hear from the courts whether the appointment of Sean Abrams was actually legal or not. And I suspect that the courts are going to say, no, it wasn't legal, because the other guy, Ngasana, was essentially, if you remember, he was given 20 million rand by Jacob Zuma to go away. And the court is going to say, no, you bribed him to go away. So actually, it wasn't a proper vacancy there. And I think Sean is going to find himself happily out in the field, chomping on a piece of grass. And we will live a happy life. Thank God for that, because we need some prosecutions to happen in this country. So I think that's the first
thing. I don't think the NPA have pulled off a single successful prosecution with respect to this whole state capture thing since it all began.
No, they haven't. Not one. I mean, the NPA...
And there's so much evidence already in the public domain.
Left, right, and center, they can't prepare a case. He's leading an institution that cannot prepare a case. So think about, at the beginning of the year, I was one of those people, Vrede, dairy farm, people are going to go to jail. They can't put it together. There's so many of them. You know, I was quaking in my boots on a few weeks ago when Duduzane Zuma appeared in court, because you think the NPA is going to prosecute this guy with Sean Abrahams at the top of it? No, the docket is going to get lost. They're going to say, it's going to be, no, you've got too little. The judge is going to say, there's no prospect of success because your evidence is flimsy, da, da, da. They can't. Even with the culpable homicide case, if it wasn't for Gerinel and AfriForum and those guys, it wouldn't even have gone to court. So they actually want to throw cases instead of prosecute people.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. So, I mean, Nomcobo Jiba, four courts found that she's not fit to hold that office.
They don't even want her as an advocate, because they've thrown her off the advocate's role.
Exactly. And that's the victory she won last week, 2 weeks ago. But I see the general counsel of the bar has appealed that and is taking it to the Constitutional Court. Mm. But basically, we have people who are supposed to send the bad guys to jail, and they can't do it. That's what the NPA is. They're supposed to send the bad guys to jail. Have you seen a bad guy going to jail? No. I mean...
No, I see them at 5-star hotels around Johannesburg.
lots of those. Uh-huh. So it's a bit of good news that Cyril is standing up. He's finding a backbone here. That's nice. But he could use a backbone on other issues too. Where he seems to be.
Justice, we're going to miss having you in the studio with us. We will still talk to you from time to time, I hope, and we'll be able to catch up with you while you are observing Trump's America at close quarters and watching us from a little bit of distance.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun, me and Donald Trump. Me and Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. All right, Justice, loved having you as part of the Burning Platform for such a long time. As I said, we're not going to sever this link at all. We're going to keep talking to Justice. The Burning Platform will continue, but today we're saying goodbye to him as he and his family locate to Los Angeles for an exciting new chapter.
Whoop, whoop.
He has now begun his ascent.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Mr. Malala.
No, I speak to Sia in the morning again.
You know what I mean?
All right, thank you. Thank you, Justice. CliffCentral.com